Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, this is Richard Cohn. You are listening to Authors Beyond Words. I'm the publisher at Beyond Words Publishing. And today I have the true pleasure of introducing our listening audience to a very, very wonderful, accomplished woman, Maryam Maymay Ali. Maryam is the eldest of Muhammad Ali's 9 children. And she is currently working on a solo theatrical performance that will tour nationally as well as internationally. She has been a public speaker for many years, and Maryam also has 15 years of experience as a social worker in the area of juvenile delinquency prevention and youth development. More information is available on Maryam's website, and that is www.maryamali.com. And Maryam is spelled M-A-R-Y-U-M, and then capital A-L-I.com. Maryam, it's great to be with you this morning.
Oh, my gosh, Richard. I am so honored to be doing this show with you. We go back 20 years?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Well, we had dark hair, now we have gray hair, but I cheat and dye mine, so.
I haven't gotten to that level yet.
Oh, man, I think I'll go a beautiful silver gray at about 70, so I have about 15 years to go before I'm going to give in.
Oh, that's perfect. I forgot to mention to our audience that one of the principal reasons that we're talking today is that you are the author of the book, I Shook Up the World, and this is the official celebration of 20 years since it first came out. I think our audience would love to know what first led you to working on this inspiring story of your father.
Wow. So 20 years ago, I was working at a daycare. It was like an after-school program daycare in Las Vegas. And I was in college at the same time getting my degree in social work. And I would read stories to the little kids. And they were really little. And something like 1 to 5. And sometimes some of the books wouldn't hold their attention, so I would make up words to keep them engaged because they're really small. So I would read the book, and then they got to the point where they would say, they called me Miss Maymay. It's my nickname, Maymay. Miss Maymay, use your words. So I said, okay. So then I thought, I would love to do a children's book on my dad, but I just don't want to do, I've seen just a few on him, not many, but children don't care for history too much. So I'm like, how can I do a book explaining his history, but also conveying the fun side of him, you know, making them laugh, making them perk up. And I really didn't know how to do that. So that same year, I took a little boy who loved my dad. I was babysitting for him. He was about 7. And I took him to see a documentary. Actually, it won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Film that year. It was called When We Were Kings, and it chronicled my father's big fight in Zaire, Africa. And my dad did a poem before that fight to promote the fight. It was a funny poem on how he would train differently for fighting in Africa. And the poem, I won't tell the whole thing, but it went something like, I've wrestled with an alligator, tussled with a whale, handcuffed lightning, and put thunder in jail. And when the little boy heard that, he goes, Miss Maymay, your dad wrestled with an alligator? So the kid was really confused, and the light bulb went off in my head, and I said, that's it. I'll take my father's funny poetry, which is really childlike poetry, like tall tales for children almost, and I will have an illustrator illustrate those funny poems throughout the book. So as I'm doing the history, you know, and pivotal moments in my dad's life and how those moments can help teach kids lessons about themselves, I will also have these funny illustrations, make-believe illustrations, and it was a hit. The kids loved it. Teachers loved it. It was funny. And it showed my dad's many sides, not just the boxer and the serious guy, but also the funny man, the fun person, the happy person, the positive person. And that's how it came to be. And I said, yes, I'm going to do this.
Wow. And it's hard to believe that we got together over 20 years ago.
Yep.
And this wonderful, wonderful book has maintained its life and really inspired, I think, a lot of people,
yeah,
a lot of children and adults.
And I'm very grateful after 20 years you all decided to do a republish of a 20th anniversary edition. I'm very grateful. I have had so many people trying to find it and want it and order the used copies online, and, you know, so it's really nice that, you know, his legacy can continue and new generations can know about him through a children's book. It's always an Ollie project coming out, whether it's a film, they're working on a Broadway play now, TV series, it's nonstop. So I'm glad this book was revived for the little ones, you know, something for the little children to learn about him.
And it also works for adults, too, because in this new generation, since its inception 20 years ago.
Exactly. You're right, because I guess if someone is 20 years old now, they might have children or nieces and nephews, and they were just born when the book was out. And it was so funny you say that, because I recently did a signing in Denver, and when I was trying to get the space, they had me in this little kitty corner space for 30 people, you know, and I said, you know, 20 years ago when I would do my signings, I actually get more adults. I get the Ollie fans who grew up in his era. And she goes, really? I said, yeah, I don't get like a little, I would like little children to come, but I get those diehard Ollie people, the people of his age group. And it's so funny. Lo and behold, when I did the signing, the average age was 65, 75, and they were like the people who remembered him and was living during his time, and they followed his family, you know, from when I was born all the way to now at 55 years old, so they come out in support of the family. And it was a lot of seniors. So I was happy when I was in Denver that I made it a point to go visit an elementary school. And I picked a school in the most need, that had a lot of poverty and violence, and I just made time to just, you know, go to where the children were. It's a good thing, because the signing had, and then also it was a very cold day. I think we had a nice crowd, but the weather just kind of, I think, cut the crowd in half, because there was ice on the ground, it was below zero, and a storm happened the night before. But gratefully, it still was a great crowd. So, yeah, I get a lot of Ollie fans with this book.
Well, you know, I think there's probably a story behind the story. How has this story influenced your own life, especially growing up as the eldest of nine?
You know, I think where it's very impactful, where his life has really impacted me as a African-American, Muslim, and female woman, I've had my challenges. I've had, in terms of what is said about me, what people think about me, and the stereotypes that I've witnessed and then, you know, have experienced as those three things. And my father, his life and how he dealt with all of those things have been an incredible example for me. And fortunately, I grew up a confident child despite all of those issues I've had to deal with in society. And not just isolated as black woman and Muslim, but anyone has those challenges. I don't care who you are. There's always going to be negative around you. There's always going to be someone who's doubting your abilities. There's always going to be at least one or two family members that you're like, is this my family? Are they really saying this to me? We all have challenges. They're just different because we're all human. And we all live in the same type of society. So watching my father navigate those troubled waters in such a dignified, patient, intelligent way, you know, really impacted my life. And when I do get out of sorts, I go to his example again. And I also go to the example of my faith tradition, you know, because that's what he was about. So to be able to distill that into a children's book was important to me. And yeah, I just, you know, he really was a role model for me as well. Not just, and you know, and what about my dad? I don't claim that he's a perfect person. And what I love about the imperfections is that he owed up to those. Me and my father were close. We talked about very intimate, serious things. And he made sure to engage me in those conversations fairly young because he didn't want the school system, the public school system, people on the street to influence my understanding of important concepts and things that could get me into trouble. He wanted to have those conversations with me first. And I really appreciate that. And all of my friends, you know, who have children, I tended to have a lot of guy friends, like men platonic friends, because I had female friends, but men I got along with better because there wasn't a lot of jealousy. But a lot of my guy friends who raised children, I would share with them how my dad kind of raised me because although he was very worldly and he was gone a lot, the conversations we had were so poignant, and you would think, why would you even talk to a little kid about that? But he knew my daughter's going to hear about this from somewhere. So I want her to get my definition and process this information from my perspective and from her faith's perspective before she even hears about it. So she's aware of things that can influence me in the wrong way. So, yeah, I forget the question you asked me, but I ended up where I'm at. So, so I hope that answered the question.
Well, the question was, basically how his story influenced your life.
That's it. I stayed on talking point. Well, that's how he's influenced me. So just, you know, that self-confidence and knowing that he was he's a creation of God and he's just as good and just as equal and just as deserving to be respected and have opportunities and freedoms that our Constitution and our holy books have said he has a right to. And really living up to that and saying, no, I respect your freedom, you respect mine. You know, so, yeah, it's just, I'm very grateful for that experience. And I'm also grateful that I've heard from so many people who have approached me, thousands and thousands of stories, I can't remember all of them, on how he impacted them the same way. So that's truly a blessing.
Well, did he, when he was sharing things with you, did he talk to you as though you were an equal, as though you were, in a sense, as an adult?
You know, it depends on what age I was at. So, like, you know, at 8 and 7 years old, yes, he talked to me like a dad, and you know, listen to your father, and let me tell you about this. And like I said, what was so brilliant is what he did was I hadn't formed an opinion yet, and I wasn't really tainted with the wrong perception about what we were talking about because he addressed it to me first. The first time I heard about it was through him. So when he's saying, let me tell you, when people do this, or when little boys do this, or when adults do this, I'm going, wow, really? I never heard of that before. So, and I was like a daddy's girl and very respectful of my father, too. I wasn't rebellious against him. But when you're 6, 7, 8, you're listening to your parents at that age. And that's the age, you know, I mean, that's from 1 to, you know, the whole lifespan, but all the way up until wherever your cognitive level is, you should be trying to get children to process what's important for them for that age group, right? So
Yes. This
is the first time, let's just say, you know, pedophilia or someone, an adult bothering a child. He told me about that very young. As soon as I knew how to talk and understand right from wrong, he distilled it in a way that a 5 or 6 year old would understand. And so, I mean, I heard this from my dad first. So, but then as I got older, we would talk as, he still felt like my father. He never, you know, me and my dad were friends, but he didn't go so far. I always had a respect of him being my elder, my superior, my father, the person I respected, being a parent. I never felt like, okay, he's treating me completely equal, and I think that's kind of a mistake. I mean, it's you know, it's one thing to say, you know, I'm gonna give you this information, and as an adult, you're gonna do you're gonna do as you will with this information. That's a sign of respect, but you're still the parent, and he did explain things with that tone of, I'm worldly, I do no more than you, you can take my wisdom or not, right? So as when I became an adult, yes, it had that level of, I respect your independence as an adult, but I'm still your father, and I've been around this world and back, right? And so I've always respected him in that way, and sometimes we would have our little debates, and then he would say, touche, good point. You got me there, right? So he didn't take any parenting classes, but he knew, I want my children to understand the world. And if I can prevent traps for them, and even if they get trapped, they'll remember what I said, look back in retrospect and say, Dad told me this would happen. And I've had those moments too, like, oh my gosh, but at least I had that foundation there that my father, my grandparents, my mom, they kind of explained this already. I bumped my head. Let me fix up that little bump with a Band-Aid and some peroxide and not injure myself again. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
It sounds like he planted some wonderful seeds inside you that would at least allow you to make intelligent, and mm-hmm. and good decisions in life, if you were to choose that,
mm-hmm.
because
exactly.
he couldn't be there 100% of the time with you as you mm-hmm. Grew up and has been in your adult life, but obviously I think he hoped that whatever he taught you, whatever example he was for you, would help make a difference as you. Okay. Navigated this lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I just realized something. Your dad won the gold medal for boxing in 1960 mm-hmm. In Rome at the Olympic Games. And
yes.
And I was there.
Oh, you were? Oh, my gosh. Were you at his boxing match, or were you just at the Olympics then?
I was at his boxing match.
Unbelievable, Richard. You never told me that.
I never told you that.
Unbelievable.
I was 16 years old,
oh.
And my parents, my dad and mom, wanted us, as my sister and me, to go to a trip to Rome,
wow.
to the Olympic Games. And my dad had gotten tickets to different venues and different events, and I was there to see your dad.
What?
At that time, his name was Cassius Clay.
Yeah! That is incredible! He was 18. He was only 2 years older than you.
That's right.
That is amazing.
So it's It's a wonderful legacy, a wonderful connection that that we have, and I had forgotten to ever
You know
share
what's
that
so interesting about that, Richard? Just show you how life is a circle. I bet you any amount of money that no publisher in the world that could have published this book was at that boxing match. And in my children's book is a picture of that gold medal, and you are the company that did the book. I don't think that's a coincidence.
I agree
you
with
know, I sent this manuscript to a couple places, and they turned me down. And I said, you know, no problem. You know, my father lost sights before. And I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious of what one publisher said to me in response. I just laughed out loud. They said, thank you for your submission, but we're doing a book about your father from someone who grew up in his same neighborhood. And I said to myself, well, more power to you. I'm just his daughter, but that okay. But I wasn't mad. If they already made a commitment to that person, then of course they couldn't have two. But I just thought it was funny that they would say that to me. And I just, you know, when I found you guys, and thank you so much for being the publisher.
You're very welcome.
Everyone loves Oracle cards. They make great gifts for you or anyone, and I know where you can get the best ones. BeyondWord.com. These decks are created by top visionaries with beautiful, unique, original artwork. With over 20 beautiful card decks and easy-to-understand guidebooks from angels to spirit animals, there is certainly one deck or more that calls out to you. These visionary decks are fun, filled with wisdom, and can give you insight. So visit BeyondWord.com. Go to Product, Type, and click on Cards. It's so much fun. Do it now. BeyondWord.com.
Picture this. It's Saturday night, and you want to watch a film. Not one of those violent blood and guts film, but one that makes you feel good or become spiritually aware or gives you information in a thought-provoking way. That's when you visit Beyond Words Publishing. They have these films. Get videos on demand, buy DVDs, or even get information on how to host a movie screening for your community. Visit BeyondWord.com and explore their videos and their new release, Cat People. Saturday night just got better. BeyondWord.com.
Get a second chance at life at any age. Turn your life around to be happy, successful, and fulfilled. It's an easy step-by-step process with Michael Clinton's new book, Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life. Reimagine yourself, own who you are, act on what's next, and reassess relationships. All to roar into the second half of your life, which is the name of the book. Get your copy of Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life by Michael Clinton at BeyondWord.com, Amazon.com, or order it from any bookstore. Go ahead and roar. You deserve it. Remember this name, Beyond Words Publishing. If you remember the best-selling book, The Secret, then you already know Beyond Words Publishing. For the last 36 years, they've been publishing the best metaphysical, spiritual, and self-help material. So here's the real secret. You always get the best books, audio, and film direct from Beyond Words Publishing. Visit their website, beyondword.com, or call 503-531-8700. They'll accept all major credit cards and PayPal. So visit beyondword.com.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Maymay, I just was thinking about that moment when I was there in Rome, and I'm pretty sure I was not at the final fight when he won the gold medal, but I was at one of the other rounds when he won on his way to that moment.
Wow.
And,
I think in the children's book, I talk about the Olympics, and I remember, you know, when I was writing it, there's poetry throughout the book and little funny things he said, but there's one part of the book, and that's the part of the Rome 1960 Olympics where I had to make up something because I couldn't find exactly what he said, and I called him up and said, is it all right for me to use this poem for the Olympics because I can't believe what he said, and I'm under the deadline. I'll have time to find it. And I read it to him, and he goes, I didn't say that. That sounds like something I would say. But what I did was I did just a little short poem about how he prayed he would win at the fight, and then he announced, I fought a Belgian, Russian, and Polish fellow, defeated them all to take home the medal. So what I did was I looked who he fought to get to the gold medal, and that's who he fought. He fought someone from a Belgian, a Russian, and a Polish man. And he, because, you know, the Olympics, you have to fight all the best from around the world. And so I just took the facts of his opponents and then kind of put up a little two-line poem about it. But he approved it, so it ended up in the book. But everything else, I quote him as saying, he said, you know. And that was just a fun little fact.
Well, and in your book, it's really written in a very unique format, because the book unfolds your dad's life as a series of boxing rounds.
And, yeah.
And how did his story begin?
You know, the book story began with the incident that started his boxing off, you know. And I relate to children, when bad things happen, there's a lesson to be learned, whether you're correcting a mistake you made or whether that negative experience put you on a path you're supposed to be on anyway. So my dad wasn't a rich kid. You know, he wasn't even middle class. A lot of documentaries call him middle class, and he wasn't middle class. I mean, they sometimes didn't have enough food and, you know, not enough shoes to wear, and, you know, so they struggled, but they struggled in dignity. He wasn't in complete poverty, but he wasn't a rich kid or a middle class kid. And his cherished item, the most expensive thing he had ever gotten, was a Schwinn bike. And I think back then it was like $60. It was very expensive. And very soon after he got this bike, it was stolen. And that's what put him on the path to boxing. He went into a fair and to talk to a police officer who was at the fair, and that officer, Joe Martin, was a boxing coach. And Joe Martin kind of calmed him down and said, hey, you know, if you're going to beat up the guy who stole your bike, you got to know how to box. But what Joe Martin was actually doing was trying to divert that anger and frustration and any violence that may have resulted from his bike being stolen into boxing, something productive, something healthy, and a positive activity for him after school. So that's how he started boxing. And he, you know, he didn't know when his bike got stolen that bike being stolen would make him Muhammad Ali, right? And so I try to tell kids, you know, it's okay to be upset about things, and even this is a great lesson for adults, you know, because adults get depressed, and then they go to drinking or smoking or whatever they go to numb their hardship. And we learn from hardships, and in this life we're going to have them, guaranteed. I don't care who you are, rich, poor, black, white, I don't care where you're from. You're going to have hard times, whether they're physical, financial, psychological, emotional. It's going to happen. So how do we maintain resilience through that? And so in a way for our young person, I try to explain this stealing of this bike, you know, is how he ended up being a boxer. So that's kind of how it starts. And I thought it would be really cool to not do chapters but do rounds. And when I have like a group of kids, it's so cute, Richard. I do a PowerPoint presentation with the pictures on the screen. I don't like to just read the book. I want them to read the book. But I'll go hit the lessons, and I engage the kids and have, they're talking maybe 40% of the time during my presentation because I ask them, has anything ever happened to you that made you upset? You know, and they'll go around the room, and they're raising their hand. Yeah, this happened. This. Go into emotional control, anger control, because my father didn't wreck his room. He didn't go out and steal something. He didn't fight somebody at school. He kept his cool because he listened to his parents. right? And I talk to them and say, how do you avoid getting angry or hurting someone? And they raise their hands. I take deep breaths. I lead out of the room. My mom told me to go listen to music. And so we're really getting into social, emotional type of learning things for kids. So I really like to, as a social worker being my background, I like to take a point in his life and then look at the children and say, what has happened in your life similar to this? Because if they can't parallel themselves with these stories and think of, and have a critical kind of thought process of, that's happened to me before and how am I going to handle it, then it's just a story without impact, right? So, and I also do that because the teachers that are in the room or the parents that may be there, it's ideas for them, because I've worked with children and families to try to, you know, get them to function in a more positive way. So that's how I kind of, I go a little deeper, and they can, and now I know when they're reading the book, after they hear this presentation, they're connecting it to something, you know, and they're remembering those things that they said. So I just did that recently in Denver, and it was so beautiful, because these kids, they have the lowest test scores. They had the lowest test scores in that state. But I'm telling you, these kids have studied my dad before I came, and they were the smartest group that knew about the history of my father. So it just goes to show you, when you engage in children that way and when you let them talk about what their lives are like, even though they're small to you, that really makes them think about themselves in a different way.
Absolutely right. I think you said it's stories with impact, because it allows the audience, it allows your children that you're talking to think, oh, that something like that happened to me, and this
exactly.
is how I responded, or if that ever were to happen to me, this is how I would respond.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, you're absolutely right. And when you look at the who it is, and that's like who he became, responding that way, he became the someone who became the best at what he chose to do in life. And that makes it all the more impactful. Like, you want to follow a successful path, and this person did have success, and people do love him and respect him. So whatever your life trajectory is, you do want to respect, love, and you want to respect other people, and you want your life to be fulfilling. So being that person did that and became Muhammad Ali, that's beautiful. It's not that everyone has to be famous, but this behavior, you know, and these skills that he had led to something wonderful. And that's the message.
Yes.
Get a second chance at life at any age. Turn your life around to be happy, successful, and fulfilled. It's an easy step-by-step process with Michael Clinton's new book, Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life. Reimagine yourself, own who you are, act on what's next, and reassess relationships, all to roar into the second half of your life, which is the name of the book. Get your copy of Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life by Michael Clinton at beyondword.com, amazon.com, or order it from any bookstore. Go ahead and roar. You deserve it.
Picture this. It's Saturday night, and you want to watch a film. Not one of those violent blood and guts film, but one that makes you feel good or become spiritually aware or gives you information in a thought-provoking way. That's when you visit Beyond Words Publishing. They have these films. Get videos on demand, buy DVDs, or even get information on how to host a movie screening for your community. Visit beyondword.com and explore their videos and their new release, Cat People. Saturday night just got better. Beyondword.com.
Remember this name, Beyond Words Publishing. If you remember the best-selling book, The Secret, then you already know Beyond Words Publishing. For the last 36 years, they've been publishing the best metaphysical, spiritual, and self-help material. So here's the real secret. You always get the best books, audio, and film direct from Beyond Words Publishing. Visit their website, beyondword.com, or call 503-531-8700. They'll accept all major credit cards and PayPal. So visit beyondword.com. Everyone loves Oracle cards. They make great gifts for you or anyone, and I know where you can get the best ones. BeyondWord.com. These decks are created by top visionaries with beautiful, unique, original artwork. With over 20 beautiful card decks and easy-to-understand guidebooks from angels to spirit animals, there is certainly one deck or more that calls out to you. These visionary decks are fun, filled with wisdom, and can give you insight. So visit BeyondWord.com. Go to Product, Type, and click on Cards. It's so much fun. Do it now. BeyondWord.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Mamie, I was thinking, have you ever thought about the person that stole the bicycle, the impact?
You know, it's so funny. I always wondered, did he know that's what he started? Did he ever figure that out? I don't know, because the bicycle story, was he even alive when the bicycle story came out? Because no one knew about the bicycle story until my dad was successful and told the story.
Wow.
So I could just imagine if he's watching television like 20 years later and going, hey, I stole that Schwinn in front of that fair that day. I don't know. I have no idea. That's amazing. Good question. And, you know, I think probably he didn't know, because who would not come out and say, I got to admit, I'm the one that stole the bike. So
yeah.
I'm partially responsible for Muhammad Ali's success. Because, you know, people like attention. So
yes.
I would think if he did steal it, he would admitted it.
Yes.
I was just a kid. I didn't know. But I'm the reason he became a boxer, you know. So I would predict the person had no clue or wasn't even around to find out that that was really him. Or maybe he thought he could get arrested in retrospect, like he could still get arrested for it. That's hilarious. You know, that would be a good comedy sketch, the guy that stole the bike. What
yeah.
is he doing now? Oh,
well,
man.
It's as you've alluded to, there are no mistakes in life. Things,
yes,
things happen.
Yes.
Things happen for a reason. And
they do.
And what a pivotal moment in a lifetime when that person took the bike and it changed the trajectory of your dad's life. And
yeah.
meeting with the policeman, who knows what would have happened otherwise?
Yeah, you know, in our faith tradition in Islam, there's a very strong belief of being completely content and at peace with how life goes, because there's a bigger understanding and there's a bigger purpose for everything. And it's very profound, because a lot of people commit suicide. They don't have that. That's not a thought. That's not a belief system for people who kill themselves. They think, this is it. I can never come back from this. Life will never get better. There's no meaning. I'm out. Right? So to have that understanding of, I'm not created to take my own life. Everything that happens, happens for a reason. And my job is to try to find a way to overcome and leap this barrier somehow. And it's very important. It's very important to look at things that way. It doesn't mean we're not going to be a little depressed or sad about something or go through hard times, but to just completely give up. And you have people that completely give up on their dream. They completely give up on a goal. They completely give up on their health, their children. I mean, because they don't understand this to be real. That we have challenges, but always strive to do the right thing by yourself and other people, no matter what those challenges are, you know. So very, very strong. You don't have to be a certain religion to have that belief in just the universe and justice that's within the universe that's beyond what you may understand, right? So, yeah, that's I learned that a lot from him. Because he lived that. He really did.
Yeah, he really did. And and have you, in your lifetime, have you had challenges that you had to overcome?
Oh, most definitely. And I've been in low emotional points, and you made mistakes, and you know, I found my way out of those things, not to an extreme, but extreme for me, right? So yeah, we're all human, and yes, and my father's had those points. You know, you may not have seen them, but he's had points in his life where things were really rough, and he didn't understand really which way to go. But what I noticed my father do was stay still and introspective until the answer came. You know, just stay still. He struggled with his Parkinson's, and it wasn't until he lit the torch at the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta where he felt like I could be more public with my disease. People still do love me. Because he was kind of depressed around that time because there wasn't a lot of information about Parkinson's. He hadn't met anyone with Parkinson's. He wasn't involved in the community, in advocacy. It was a lot of misunderstanding in his own brain. And that Olympic moment kind of changed his perception about his disease and how free he could be with it. So yeah, he had his challenges. You know, he had his personal challenges. But I saw him just kind of deal with those rough waters and try to find answers. And he always consulted with, you know, faith leaders and family members and just trying to look for what's the answer to this. But he did maintain the idea that this is God's plan for me somehow. I just got to figure out how to understand it. He always felt that deep in his heart. He never, you know, this is a plan, but I got to figure this out type of thing. But I've seen him down. I've seen him struggle, you know, but he kind of did it in kind of a peaceful way where he was looking for the answers.
Was there ever a feeling of, like, surrendering to the moment and waiting for that answer to emerge?
Yeah. It's so interesting. He was a boxer, which can be seen as a violent type of sport, but his nature wasn't violent. His nature was very peaceful, nonviolent, and patient, you know. That's kind of how he handled things. I never saw him just outright just give up, you know. Yeah, because we would talk about it, and I felt very open to ask him those hard questions. You know, how are you feeling? What do you think about this? What's going on? And we would talk. And I just, you know, the dignified way in which he kind of dealt with those things. And that's, you know, I saw my father evolve and grow, you know. The person that I'm very weary of and I run away from is that person to say, this is just how I am. And they don't think that they're moldable. They don't think that they can evolve and change. They think their personality or characteristics is just absolute and final. And that's just the worst way to think about yourself. You know, we're moldable, you know. In every way, our bodies can change and get healthy. Our brain can change and get healthy. We just have to want it and seek that and make it so, seek it so much, learn the skills and the coping mechanisms and do those skills and coping mechanisms until they're a habit, they're habitual. And once they're a habit, you're changing your character. You know what I'm saying? And always fill yourself up with things that maintain that, because one thing about life is, you know, we fall and we forget and we can go back to old habits very easily. So keep those elements and stay in those orbits that's going to maintain those coping mechanisms for you. That's why people, when they go to AA, they go their whole lives. You know, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous cleans them up, but they keep going to meetings 40 years later because they stay in the orbits of health and wellness.
Everyone loves Oracle cards. They make great gifts for you or anyone, and I know where you can get the best ones. BeyondWord.com. These decks are created by top visionaries with beautiful, unique, original artwork. With over 20 beautiful card decks and easy-to-understand guidebooks from angels to spirit animals, there is certainly one deck or more that calls out to you. These visionary decks are fun, filled with wisdom, and can give you insight. So visit BeyondWord.com. Go to Product, Type, and click on Cards. It's so much fun. Do it now. BeyondWord.com. Get a second chance at life at any age. Turn your life around to be happy, successful, and fulfilled. It's an easy step-by-step process with Michael Clinton's new book, Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life. Reimagine yourself, own who you are, act on what's next, and reassess relationships. All to roar into the second half of your life, which is the name of the book. Get your copy of Roar Into the Second Half of Your Life by Michael Clinton at BeyondWord.com, Amazon.com, or order it from any bookstore. Go ahead and roar. You deserve it.
Picture this. It's Saturday night, and you want to watch a film. Not one of those violent blood and guts film, but one that makes you feel good or become spiritually aware or gives you information in a thought-provoking way. That's when you visit Beyond Words Publishing. They have these films. Get videos on demand, buy DVDs, or even get information on how to host a movie screening for your community. Visit BeyondWord.com and explore their videos and their new release, Cat People. Saturday night just got better. BeyondWord.com.
Remember this name, Beyond Words Publishing. If you remember the best-selling book, The Secret, then you already know Beyond Words Publishing. For the last 36 years, they've been publishing the best metaphysical, spiritual, and self-help material. So here's the real secret. You always get the best books, audio, and film direct from Beyond Words Publishing. Visit their website, beyondword.com, or call 503-531-8700. They'll accept all major credit cards and PayPal. So visit beyondword.com.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Mamie, when you were saying you were talking about how people can grow and change, and how you saw that in your dad, that he was a very dignified person, but you watched him develop and you watched him grow. What occurred to me is the phrase that nothing is possible in a closed mind. And when you were talking about how important it is to learn the skills and,
right,
and allow them to become a habit, because if one doesn't, then it's like an empty life. There's nothing there.
Right. Exactly. You know. You have to seek out. You got to seek out what it is. Whatever struggles you have, talk to the people who are experts, or talk to family members who you like the way their life is going, and you say, "Hey, how did you do that?" Or get therapy, or read self-help books. Reading is, man, it's more important now than ever, because everything's in a soundbite, and you're looking at Instagram and Facebook, and not that there's positive things that could come out of that, but the soundbites and the quick videos are not enough for you to really understand concepts in a deep way. And if you're going to really be a critical thinker, you know, you have to look at what are all the possible solutions, what are all the facts around the subject, and you got to read, you know. And now we have Audible. So for people who don't care for reading, and I'm the kind of person that when I read, I get sleepy. I kind of get that after my dad. I get very sleepy. It better be a good book if it's going to keep me awake. But I love Audible. Because I can multitask with it. I could clean the house, and I could be in the car driving somewhere. And I found that some books are so good, I just ordered the book anyway, because I'm like, I have Audible, but I want to actually see these powerful words as well. But yeah, reading and finding out the information, whatever it is, whether it's self-help, whether it's professional. People ask me, "Hey, I want to write a children's book. How do you do that?" And you know what I tell them? I say, whatever kind of book, I said, you know, there are different kinds of children's books. I said, you have to get at least 2 to 3 books on this topic and read them. I always suggest read them first straight through without taking any notes. Just read the book for understanding. Just read it. And then go back to the first page and then take your notes and map out your plan of your book. And my sister Hannah, she's written 3 books about my dad. One is a memoir, and, you know, she's done different books. And she came to me, she said, you did a children's book, what should I do? And I told her that. I said, if you're going to write a memoir, get a couple books on how to write a memoir. If you're going to write fiction, nonfiction, whatever you're going to do, get a book on it and study it. And I'll say my sister Hannah, her books are excellent. Her last one is called At Home with Muhammad Ali. And the audio version is amazing. She picked a wonderful voiceover actor to do the book, and it brought tears to my eyes. It was just a beautiful book. And my sister self-taught, but she took my advice and studied how to do that. So I say, you know, reading is really the answer to a lot of things. It's a book on everything. And what I like to do is buy multiple books on the topic so I can see a few different perspectives on it and dive in. You know, because some people just want you to give them all the answers, and it's like, I can't tell you in a couple conversations on how to be great at something. You really have to study it and take that time and get off of social media for a while and dedicate yourself so many hours a week and finish it. And, you know, we schedule everything. We schedule our job. We schedule the gym. But schedule evolving as a person in whatever area you're trying to evolve. Schedule that time. And you can mold yourself into being greater at that, whatever you want to be, whatever skill it is, whatever profession it is, you can be greater at that. You can have a better understanding of it. But to me, reading is so important now more than ever. It really is important because we have all these alternatives and distractions that waste a lot of our time.
It's so true. And social media certainly has redeeming qualities, but it also mm-hmm. can become a distraction.
Yeah, because it was built to be addictive. You know, Netflix had a great documentary, what was it called? The Social Dilemma. And what was so profound about it is that people who created these platforms will not let their children have a phone because they know the danger in the addiction. You know, it's an addiction, you know. And I have a couple friends that will call me up, and they want to spend hours talking about social media topics. And I'm like, look, focus on your goals and dreams. You're too wrapped up into binging television and, you know, Facebook, and that can be dangerous because you're wasting your time, you know, so, yeah.
Well, and I think when you said, you know, schedule evolving as a person, so when someone's doing a daily list of, this is what I need to do, and I have this meeting, and I have this to do, But if you can schedule some personal time, some evolution time, where you can focus and grow, and this is true for me, because someone has asked me to write a book about my life, and I started it, and then I forgot to schedule time, and so everything else becomes a time suck that just takes away.
It's so hard.
Because of you and this moment in time, I'm going to schedule finishing my book.
Yeah, and I have to remind myself of it. You know, it's like anything I've ever accomplished, I scheduled it. It's like I remember I wrote a screenplay, a children's film, and I pitched it all over Hollywood, and I actually into really big producers, and I got an agent right away. They loved the structure because I learned how to write a script. And what happened was I saw my film in 4 different films. There's a lot of stealing in Hollywood. And I saw literal scenes from this movie. And one movie actually took the whole concept and made it a musical. And I was like, wow. And it's because I didn't come in with any kind of I didn't come in with any funding, without a star. And what they do is they see these ideas and they go, well, we'll do this without her. And we'll do it just enough where she won't really have the money. It won't be worth her suing us. And it was such a corrupt business. I stopped, you know, and I could have kept going, but I was working as a social worker at the time. But the biggest thing that I learned is that I scheduled every Wednesday, me and my writing partner, from like 7 to 11 at night. And we didn't miss one Wednesday. We only missed one Wednesday, and he had to go to a funeral, and we made it Thursday. But like clockwork, we Wednesday from 7 to 11, something like that, for 6 months, that's all we did. And what happened was we gave ourselves homework. I did homework, but that Wednesday came, and I didn't schedule anything, and we finished the script. And that's how I do everything now. I just schedule it.
Well, I think that for our listening audience, you've given them so much inspiration and wisdom today, and the scheduling time to read I Shook Up the World and to read your book would be a wonderful thing as well for everyone. And you are a gift to the world, and thank you so much.
So are you, Richard. So are you and your publishing company and the great things you guys do. And I'll just make a note that when you search the book, you have to put I Shook Up the World 20th Anniversary Edition to get to the right thing, because when I go on Amazon or something and I put in just the original title, it doesn't take me to the new paperback edition. So I Shook Up the World 20th Anniversary Edition is what you should put in the search to find it.
Thank you very, very much. And for anyone who wants to learn more, you can go to www.mariamali.com. Thank you again so much.
Thank you so much, and bless you for this wonderful platform and great interview that you do all the time. This is great for people.